So welcome everybody to The Undersong. My name is Andrew. I'm speaking to you from London, UK. And today we're going to talk about another one of my favorite tracks. But I have a guest who actually chose this song. And he's my friend. He's got an EP out and he's going to introduce himself now. So John, I don't want to call you that.
My name is John.
No, it's not. Your name is CJ.
My name is John Tiller, and you can go and buy my EP called Battle Ready now. If you go to my Twitter, it's John Tiller, all the details are there, or johntiller.net, my website, or Spotify, and all that stuff.
What kind of music is your EP, just so people know?
It's like kind of Americana, folky
with
stuff.
A bit of Nickelback, yeah?
So Nickelback's my biggest influence. Kind of Americana, folky stuff. I like Bob Dylan. I try and sound like Bob Dylan. It sounds a bit like Bob Dylan.
Ooh, that's a statement, right? That's a statement.
just the songs aren't as good.
Okay, so I'm going to play a little bit of the track for this week now. And then we're going to talk a little bit about it. So we're back.
Are you playing air drums?
Air drums. You cannot do air drums with this song, right? I've been like the previous week, the track that I picked was If I Had a Gun. And he has a really good, like, drum feel on that one that I always do an air drum to.
I think on that first record, he played a lot of drums himself.
Do you think?
Yeah, he's a good drummer.
Is he?
He is.
He's got really short arms.
No, he has a little kit.
He's got like a kid's drum.
Yeah, he got it in a Christmas cracker.
Oh. Anyway, so CJ, why did you choose The View from the Afternoon?
Okay, so I love the Arctic Monkeys, and it's hard to pick a single track from them. I like this one because it's like the first track on the first album. It really makes a statement to introduce your whole discography like this. It's such a good song. I remember first hearing them when I was a kid and being electrified by how different it sounded compared to the other stuff at the time. I mean, obviously they're influenced by the Strokes and similar bands from that time, but it was the fact that it was that kind of music mixed with like this northern grit and all these cool lyrical references to stuff I recognized from going on nights out.
Yeah, because that first album is very much about like everyday stuff, isn't it? Like the lyrics are all about nights out and like texting your girlfriend or something like that, isn't it? It's very relatable, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that the title, The View from the Afternoon, is about anticipating the night out and hoping it's going to be great, but then it never quite is great, or it ends up being a bit of a
bit
of a mess.
That's what Alex said about the song. So he said, open quotes, "This is one of the last songs written for the album. There's nothing clever. It's just about anticipating the evening, finding comfort in familiarity and the fact that you know you're bound to send a draft message or something before the sun comes up. I think I've stopped doing that now," he said. The song was released as the opening track of Whatever People Say I Am, That's What I'm Not. That's the longest album title ever. But then it's a bit of a weird one because the track was featured again on the 5-track EP that they released called Who the Fuck Are Arctic Monkeys. It was expected that it was going to be the third single of the first album, but instead of releasing that third single, they just released the whole 5-track EP with The View from the Afternoon and 4 new songs in that EP. So for that reason, it's kind of not a single because the EP is not an album. It's not long enough to be, it's not, I think it's to do with the price, actually. It's not expensive enough to be an album. So it's not technically a single, but it was released as with a video, which is amazing.
Yes, I love the video. Explain it to me. It's right. The drummer in the courtyard and people coming up to him.
Yeah, so that's like it looks like a council stage for me. I don't know if that's what it's meant to look like, but it's got like high-rise buildings around him, like in a courtyard playing. And it's literally just this shot of the drummer. It's not Matt Helders, by the way. It's just like an actor. And he's playing the drum part of the song. And then constantly there's people coming and trying to distract him or heckle him. Or like there's even a guy with a baseball bat trying to like hit him in the neck and stuff. And he's just there playing the song relentlessly until his hands bleed. I love that scene when he opened his hands and you can see the blood under the drum. It's crazy. Yeah, at the end, the video is mostly black and white. And then there's one point where it's in color, which is just that the actor, like it looks like a bathtub or like some water or something. And then in the end, like a moon shatters and it shatters on the guy who's trying to hit him with a baseball bat. It's a bit of a random one at the end. However, there's a strong reference there to a story about Buddha. And I am not a religious person, so I'm sorry if I tell this story wrong. but basically, it's about, because Buddha apparently tried to meditate for 3 days to reach nirvana, but he kept getting distracted by devils. And the devils would be like the people distracting the drummer in this video. And then in the video, there's a little girl that comes in and she's drinking milk from a carton, and then she gives the milk to the drummer. And that's the story about Buddha as well. That's supposed to be the reference, but I really love that video. And I can't believe it's not, I had never seen that video before doing the research for this podcast. Like, I never seen the video. It's a really good one.
It's like, it's just long ago enough to have not been shared a lot. I'm amazed it's not a single. I always think of it as a single, because it's the first one you hear when you put on the record, and it's been in their live sets all these years. I think they just stopped playing it.
They started playing it again.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I watched a performance at the Transmit Festival in Scotland, and it's crazy. The sing-along is insane. I love how people also sing like the instrumental bits.
Yeah, they do, don't they? They sing the riffs. Yeah.
But it is a bit weird to see Alex or like the band playing that song with the Tranquility Hotel backdrop, and they're all in like these grandpa suits and stuff. It's a bit funny, isn't it?
They're like two completely different bands.
They are, exactly.
Did they stop playing it because the aesthetic didn't go? Because a lot of Tranquility based stuff, slow and got a lot of keyboards in it, whereas all the debut albums just guitar, bass and drums, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they started playing it again during the Tranquility tour, and I think it was opening the set as well, which is strange. I was reading the comments, and a lot of people were saying that Alex had to go back to his original key to sing that song, which is also weird because he's going like all low key and all this throughout his set, and then he just goes like super high for the view from the afternoon and the songs from the first album in general.
So I've got a question for you. Which one do you prefer? Do you like them earlier or later?
Well, you know I hate that Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino album, like, the plague. Oh, fucking hell, it's such a bad album. I was actually, because I was doing some research on the opening tracks, like, of all Arctic Monkeys albums, and they actually start their albums, like, always, like, with a banger, like, with a very quick, like, upbeat song. They're not those kind of bands, you know, that the first song starts and it's a bit, like, kind of making you ease into the album.
Yeah.
And then I had to listen to Start Treatment, which is the first song of the
album. I had to listen to it.
I couldn't finish it. I hate that album. I'm sorry for the Arctic Monkeys fans out there. And I know that there's a big part of the fans who don't like that album either. I was actually at a gig. I saw the Arctic Monkeys in September 2018 as part of the Tranquility tour. And whenever they played songs from the latest album, you could just see like this flow of people coming up and leaving. So that's what I would do. I would just like go have a wee or drink a beer or something, and then come back for the other albums.
And that was in Manchester, was it?
That was in Manchester Arena.
Yeah. See, there's the thing with this song that we're talking about and that album. It's such a good depiction of Northern life in that time period. Talking about going drinking, being out with your mates, even just mundane stuff like being in a taxi or getting thrown out of a club or whatever, it's all there. And he does it with the soul of a poet, which is amazing, really, because he's like 17 or something when he wrote that song.
Was he? Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, because he is 30, what, 4 now?
Yeah.
That was 14 years ago, so he would have been 20, yeah.
Really? Oh, so that's later than I thought. But I guess that's when it came out. But that's the actual writing of it might have been earlier.
Yeah.
But still, he's like sort of wise beyond his years.
He is, yeah. And I think it's a bit like what happened with Oasis as well, isn't it? Oasis released Definitely Maybe, and it was like relatable lyrics of like growing up in Burnage and stuff.
Mm.
And they obviously start to distance themselves from it. And which is natural. I'm not criticizing them for it, because obviously they don't live that life anymore. So how can they be 45 years old writing about growing up in Manchester, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess it's natural, but I think with Tranquility, they just went a bit too far.
Yeah. And so they went to the moon, literally.
They went to the moon and opened up.
There's something to be said for keeping true to yourself, like those first few albums. And I think that's why people were streaming out, because if you're playing in Manchester or Sheffield or Leeds or Liverpool, the people who like those records aren't going to relate as much to the later ones when he lives in LA.
Potentially, but I must say that people were still like banging to AM tracks.
Yeah.
Like, but it was literally Tranquility. I think honestly, when they released that album, I think they knew it was going to be a love or hate kind of thing. I think they knew part of their fans would just not get it. And
yeah, I love it.
You love it.
What's that lyric you hate about the moon's side boob? What is it? What does he say?
I think it says something along the lines of "Kiss me underneath the moon's side boob."
How is that not the best lyric ever? That's amazing.
No, I can't. I mean, no. What the fuck does that mean? The moon doesn't have a boob or a side boob. What the fuck?
And what's the other one about a cheeseburger?
Good. So how did it go from writing about nights out in Sheffield to "Kiss me underneath the moon's side boob"?
I think maybe he took some drugs in between.
Oh, drugs, yeah, definitely.
What's the cheeseburger one?
What's a cheeseburger? Well, you do the cheeseburger.
Is it good morning cheeseburger or good evening, good night cheeseburger?
I think it's good morning, isn't it? Have you seen the video of he was playing with the Last Shadow puppets and someone throws a cheeseburger on his crotch? It was like a, like, how do you say it when you're predicting the future? Yeah. Oh, did he write good morning cheeseburger based on that event? Maybe.
So yeah, here's the thing I wanted to say about the lyrics and how good he is. So those early songs, he's using, obviously, like, Sheffield's a really thick accent. And a problem I've had, and a lot of English bands have, is when they're writing a song, we're so influenced by American music that you slip into this sort of transatlantic accent where you'll say, ain't this, ain't that, or little things that aren't in your regular dialect. And yeah. So there's always a problem because instead, we wouldn't say ain't, we'd say isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit in here where he says alt, O-W-T, which is what we'd say for anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So because his accent's so thick, it actually works in his favour, so he's able to say a lot more quicker.
Yeah, true. And I think, do you think his accent changed, like, in the later albums?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think? I can't put my finger on it. I mean,
it's all after Humbug, when as soon as he started working with Josh from Queens of the Stone Age, it's all cooler and deeper and heavier guitars, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a stylistic choice.
And even with the second Last Shadow Puppets album, he went, like, really low on that.
I like that. I think it's cool.
I love that album. And, yeah, I like that. And I think there's nothing wrong with change. A lot of people criticize them for changing and not being, like, the lads from Sheffield anymore. But how can you expect them to be, like, 14 years ago? So much has happened. Think about yourself when you were 20 years old, like, so 55 years ago. Like, how?
I'm not 75. I just look it.
Such a grumpy old man. Like, we went to see the Cortinas. Like, I am a nomad, so I don't live in the UK anymore. And I came here and I'm like, I'm going to see CJ and we're going to see a gig together. It's going to be great. And he's so grumpy. I thought you were going to go out after the gig for a drink. He's just sat standing. Oh, my back hurts.
My back did hurt.
He is 75. Yeah, definitely.
And my back hurt, right? But for a cool reason. I'd been playing guitar all day in the studio, and so my back hurt. So that's different, right? I was still doing something rock and roll. It just gave me a sore back.
You are in your 30s. I don't know exactly how old you are because you are just 75 for me, but you are in your 30s. Your back shouldn't hurt like that. And you also nearly passed out in a gig as well. That would have been so embarrassing.
I nearly passed out because the beer was £9.40 for a small bottle.
Yeah, that's true. That would make me pass out.
Welcome to the UK in 2020, folks.
Trying to buy a ticket to see Bombay and it's £37. Anyway, going back to the view from the afternoon, I just wanted to point out a few funny things about the lyrics. So obviously, it's an Arctic Monkeys lyrics. There's a lot of words. Sometimes it's hard to understand, especially in the first. Do you find that hard to understand, or is it me being a foreigner? It's not even, like, when I read it, I know what they mean because I lived in Manchester, but it's understanding what he's saying. But, like, when I listen to the album in general, like, he sings so fast with such a thick accent that sometimes it's hard to understand.
Yeah, that's the bit I like about it most. I like the bit at the end where he says, when the two for ones have unlocked the writer's block. Yeah. So that's, I guess, two for one shots or two for one drinks. And so he's able to text his his girlfriend or leave a massive rambling voicemail.
So yeah, there's a really nice reference in the lyrics to Reverend and the Makers. So if you remember, they are a band from Sheffield. I don't know if they're still around, unfortunately, but I remember listening to that first album, The State of Things, a lot when it came out like 10 years ago. Are they still around, CJ? Do you know?
Yeah, I think they've had a couple of lineup changes, but still going, yeah.
Yeah. So Alex co-wrote a lot of the songs in at the State of Things, the debut album by Reverend and the Makers, and he also sang a song called The Machine, which is really good, by the way. Go check it out on YouTube or Spotify. But the lyric references, I want to see you take the jackpot out of the fruit machine and put it all back in. You've got to understand that you can never be the bandit. No. So that's a bit of a shout out to the Reverend and the Makers there. There's also another verse in the song that I find really funny. And, you know, I'm 28 years old, so I was born in 91. And if you're probably 16 under, you won't really get what he says in this verse. And when I was doing the research for this episode, I saw a lot of kids going like, what does he mean by when she's pressed the start after she pressed the lock? And it's obviously, the song was released in 2006, so 14 years ago, and it's obviously a reference to how you unlocked your Nokia phones, like you had to press start and then unlock. So a lot of kids are confused in the internet by those lyrics. They probably think it's something like really transcendental, like, ooh, Alex is such a poet, but no, it's just Nokia phones.
I had that phone. I think he's talking about the 3210.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yeah, yeah. With the little, was that the one that had the little antenna on the top?
Like, yeah.
So do you want to, I'm not a musician, so I don't really talk about music, chords and all that, but do you want to talk a little bit about the drum parts in that song? Because I know you really love it.
Oh, God, he's so good. I mean, they're a weird band because the drummer is the best musician. Matt Helders is the most technically proficient out of all of them. They're all pretty good, though. But as soon as it starts, you just feel the energy and it drives through the whole record. Considering he was, I think I'm right in saying that he only learnt drums because all the other positions in the band were taken. They already had a guitar player, already had a bass player and a second guitar player. So he thought, all right, I'll play drums then.
He just got drums to play for Arctic Monkeys. He wasn't a drummer before.
That's crazy.
Insane. That's
and then crazy. Got really good really quickly. And I think he's the heart and soul of the band. Obviously, it's Alex's words and melodies, but this is just a great example of how the drums carry the track forward. And that fill right near the end before the last chorus. God, I love it.
He's great. Controversial topic. Do you think he's underused in Tranquility?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's why maybe a lot of people are saying if it was an Alex Turner solo album, it would have worked better because it's Matt Helders is sort of wasted on that record.
Do you have anything else in your notes that you want to mention?
So at the time, Enemy declared the Arctic Monkeys our generation's most important band. And at the time, it did feel like that.
What year is that? Do you know?
So that's 2006.
Okay.
So here's a weird thing, right? So this is how meteoric their rise was. I saw them at the Enemy Awards that year in 2006. And they were playing with We Are Scientists, Maximo Park and Arctic Monkeys. And Arctic Monkeys weren't even headlining. They were on second.
Who was first?
Maximo Park were headlining.
Maximo Park.
Right?
I love Maximo Park, but obviously they're not half as big as...
Yeah. And so in the time of the gig being booked versus actually going to the gig, that's when they blew up. So everyone was going nuts at about 7:30 when the support band came on. Because it was so good. And I think a lot of people left before Maximo Park came on. It were also good, but just, you know.
Playing after the Arctic Monkeys must be a tough job.
Yeah.
Following up that.
Well, fair play to the Arctic Monkeys going, no, it's all right, we'll go on first, it's right.
Yeah, it's okay. Very humble.
So at the time, it did feel like this is something important is happening here, you know?
Yeah, and I think people realised from the early on that Alex was a great lyricist.
Yeah.
What you have in terms of lyrics with the Arctic Monkeys, you don't really get with any other band, I don't think.
On the new record, he says, I just wanted to be one of the Strokes.
Yeah, it's the opening line of the record, isn't it?
Yeah. And yeah. So, like, I think young Alex Turner just wanted to sort of be in a cool indie band. But I think his own talent has actually set him apart from bands like that. I think it's more interesting, you know?
That's what I was going to say about that quote from the Enemy, that they are the biggest, the most important band of the generation. I think if we didn't have the Strokes, I would agree with that. Because I think, to me, when the Strokes came out with Is This It, I was 11 years old. And I was kind of listening to the Backstreet Boys. When the Strokes came out, there was something about it. And I think it was the age I was in as well. Like, I was trying to, I was kind of like growing out of the Backstreet Boys and pop music. And I remember the day I saw the video for Last Night on MTV Brazil for the first time. It was such a massive milestone. So you have to say the Strokes were really fucking important to music, to rock music. Really. And but yeah, I think maybe after the Strokes you could say Arctic Monkeys.
Honorable shout out to Libertines.
But I think, you know, people put Libertines in the same kind of bucket there, but I think the Libertines are a bit different. They're a bit more punky and a bit more daring and a bit more, I don't know, I don't put them in the same sort of like genre almost. Do you?
A bit more wrecked.
They're a bit, I don't know, like less dapper. I don't know how to put it.
They've got the suits. They've got the red jackets. It's pretty dapper. But
underneath that, they're like, like there's no t-shirt. They're just like got chest out. And,
that's true.
Yeah.
You saw them, right?
I saw them, in December, and it was my dream. They were probably the last band I loved as a teenager that I hadn't seen yet. And I saw them and it was emotional. The crowds are amazing. Like the Libertines fans are crazy.
Yeah, where was it? Brixton?
Brixton, yeah.
Wow.
Have you seen them live?
Yeah, I saw them twice back in the day, Leeds and once in Liverpool, I think.
Did you see them when they released Libertines, the second album?
No, this was the first record.
Oh my god, that was amazing.
It was mad.
But love the Libertines just as much. But yeah, I think Strokes is the band of the generation. Do you agree with that? Of our generation.
Oh, don't make me decide. Can I have all three?
No.
Block party. I'm having block party. And someone else.
Block party. I like block party. Don't. But no. They're not the most important band of the generation, are they? As always, I like to end our episodes on a bit of a funny note. I couldn't find any funny covers of this song, unfortunately. I love when people do the funny covers. But I went on Amazon and I had a look at the reviews for the View from the Afternoon single and also for Whatever People Say I Am, That's What I'm Not album. So I'm going to read some of these reviews for you, and I highly recommend, if you're ever just chilling at home, not doing anything, just go on amazon.co.uk and check reviews for albums. It's great. Click on like the 1-star and the 2-star reviews. They're usually good. So I have one from Robin Rawlings saying, I'm going to say this just as it's written. So don't like the Arctic Monkeys, but this song's all right. Wouldn't recommend anything else by them, though. I had this guy just bought a random single. How did he come across that single? Like, what the fuck?
And he thought, the world needs to know my opinion.
Oh, that's just the internet, though. And then for Whatever People Say I Am, this guy wrote this review titled, Why God Why? And it says, if you begin to listen to it seriously, though, how do you not listen to an album seriously? I don't know. But if you begin to listen to it seriously, though, which I have, you realize that besides having stupid lyrics and an annoyingly bad lead singer, in quotes, they actually can't play the instruments properly. It's just noise.
What the fuck?
Annoyingly bad singer. That's Alex for you.
Yeah, he's never going to have a future, is he?
Fucking no, goodness. Yeah. And then the final review from MDD. I love this one. From the dreariness of Alex Turner's drone voice. What the fuck is a drone voice?
I have no idea what he means there.
Anyway, apparently Alex Turner has a drone voice. To the monotonous guitars and the blooming awful backing singer, this is quite possibly the most overrated dirge I've ever come across. No emotion comes across in Turner's voice, and it is just so, like, lots of it's boring. And then this last bit is amazing. What's that I hear? It's Alex Turner's mom calling him in for supper. avoid like the plague.
I didn't know. These people are wrong.
Why did he mention that his mum was calling him Rupert Soffer? Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm just going to get my friend CJ/John Tiller to plug his EP again. So remind people where they can find you on socials and where they can listen to your music.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's John Tiller on Twitter and John Tiller on Spotify, and johntiller.net is my website where you can get the record.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks so much for joining me, CJ. My first guest in a podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. So we'll be back next week with another fun fact, with more fun facts about other tracks. Do follow us on Instagram @TheUndersong. And if you want to suggest any songs as well, feel free to do that. Feel free to call me names for hating Tranquility Hotel. I can't even say the name of the album because it's so stupid. But feel free to call me names on Instagram. I always love a bit of hate. So, yeah, see you guys next week.